Welcome to podcast recorded live at the Center for Spiritual Living in Portland, Oregon. We have many resources available for our online audience on our website at csoportland.org. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its video podcast, you can donate online at csoportland.org. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are on your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living. For more information, visit csoportland.org.
Welcome to Portland Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Bridget McCann. My pronouns are she and her. I am the Senior Minister and Spiritual Director here at the Center, and I am so happy to see all of you. And welcome to those who join us in our virtual community space as well. You are a part of us. So I am about to be either incredibly courageous or incredibly foolish, because we're going to talk about money. I'll let y'all tell me afterwards which of those I achieved. But so money, right? We all want it. We all need it. Most of us would like more of it. We associate it with success, with less stress, and with having a good life, right? And why are we talking about money in church? I know we don't call ourselves a church, but it's not really much of a secret. We say center, but we're kind of look like a church, sound like a church, act like a church, right? So anyways, we're talking about it in church because it's part of our lives. And for many people, it's a source of stress and anxiety. Having been a family law attorney for many years, I can tell you that one of the top reasons for divorce is disputes about money. Not how much money the family has, but how to use the money they have. People might feel some stress about economic opportunities available to them. There's people that live paycheck to paycheck. It can feel a little stressful. But we are Center for Spiritual Living. And if living includes dealing with money, then we get to talk about it in church. But we get to talk about it from a spiritual perspective, which is why I'm actually taking the angle of financial freedom. Because part of spiritual living is living more of that freedom that the universe intends us to have. So financial freedom, what do I mean by that term? Well, as you could probably tell from the talk title today, the path to financial freedom does not go through money. Financial freedom is not directly in and of itself about money. Money's a part of it. But financial freedom is about living life with the qualities that we want to experience, right? And I use the word freedom very deliberately because financial freedom means freedom from the burden of debt, freedom from financial stresses, freedom from the false ideas and beliefs we have about money, and freedom to live the life we intend. Freedom to care for ourselves in retirement. Freedom to travel, whether it's about the city or the state or the nation or the world, the freedom to move about, to experience the beauty and tremendous diversity that is life on this planet. Freedom to fund our priorities and the things that we value. And freedom to just have really deep, rich experience with people that we love. So yeah, it's about financial freedom, not about the money in and of itself. Because after all, money sitting in a bank does us absolutely no good. It's all about how we use it, and we are at liberty to choose how we use it. And we're also at liberty to choose our relationship with money. So let's start where we're at. And what that means for a lot of us is something I already alluded to, clearing up these false ideas about money. Last week, I spoke about prosperity in general and the idea that we need to clear the blocks we've had installed in us since we were children about prosperity to free up our consciousness. Well, the same is true when it comes to financial freedom. We need to clear out the false ideas we've been given. They include the following. You could probably think of more, but these are the ones I grew up with. Money does not grow on trees, which means it's hard to come by. Money corrupts people. Money is a necessary evil. Money cannot buy you happiness. We must choose between being rich and being happy. And the one I heard over and over and over from my devout Catholic mother, a passage from the Bible, it is easier for a camel to fit through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. More on all of these in a moment. But that last one, I gotta tell you, that one got embedded pretty deeply. But the danger of these false beliefs is that if we believe money is our source, if we believe it's hard to come by, and if we believe even when we do get it, it might be really easy to lose, then we will never be satisfied. We'll get in this vicious cycle of, well, it's hard to get, so I'm going to get as much as I can, and then once I have it, I need to be a little stingy with it. And it just, we're never satisfied. We're never satisfied because we're so focused on money that we forget to actually live. And we're never satisfied because we've made money a false idol, which is illustrated in Aesop's fable about the miser. A man sells everything he has to get a lump of gold. He takes that lump of gold. He buries it in the ground next to a particular spot in the wall. He goes there every day, uncovers the gold, and just looks at it. And he's so happy with that gold in the ground, covers it back up, goes away. Well, one day a workman sees him doing this and waits for the man to leave and then steals the gold. The next day the man returns, as he always does, discovers the gold's been stolen, and he loses it. He starts railing and pulling out his hair and making quite a fuss. A neighbor hears what's going on, comes over, and is like, what is going on? So the man tells his neighbor all about this kind of ritual that he has with this lump of gold. And the neighbor's like, oh, well, this is no big deal. Here's what you do. Get a stone, put it in the ground and bury it, and every day go and unbury it and look at it and pretend it's the gold. It'll be the same thing, because after all, even when you had the gold, you didn't have the gold because you never actually used it. This is a rich man with zero financial freedom, because instead of using that money, instead of possessing that money in a wise and good way, he let the gold possess him. And I bet he wasn't that happy in the process. So with that in mind, let's revisit these false beliefs that I shared with you a moment ago. The idea that money does not grow on trees, which, while literally true, it's led to the false belief that money is really hard to come by. So when we do get it, we should be stingy. But you know what that saying was actually really meant to teach us? Respect for money. It does not grow on trees. You do need to earn it. So maybe with the money you earn, you should show it some respect by being wise in how you use it. That's actually part of financial freedom. Money corrupts people. It is not money that corrupts people. It is the love of money that corrupts people. Because when you love money, you become selfish. You become obsessed with it, much like the miser, and this may very well lead you to lose your moral compass. Next, money is a necessary evil. It is necessary. It has a lot to do with making this very complex economy we have possible, but it is not evil in and of itself. It has everything to do with the people who possess it and how they use it. Money cannot buy you happiness. Well, let me propose that it also doesn't prevent it. I did some research into this one because psychologists have had a lot of fun with this one, the idea that money can't buy you happiness, and it gets a little complicated. It's a little nuanced. Now, what makes most people happy is love, strong relationships, a sense of purpose. Money cannot buy you those things. So in that sense, money cannot buy you happiness. But in the sense that money can help you take care of your basic needs, give you a sense of security, that's a sort of happiness that money can buy you. But here's the biggest insight I think these psychologists have found so far, is it really depends on your attitude before you got the money. If you already approach life with a happy, positive attitude, more money might actually make you happier. But if you approach life with a really negative outlook on stuff, then no amount of money is going to fix that. So money can't buy you happiness, maybe, sort of. Depends on how you look at it, right? It depends on your approach to life. Which is related to this idea. This is one I lived by for a long time. I'd rather be happy than rich. Turns out they're not mutually exclusive. You can have both. Again, it depends on your attitude. And about this Bible passage, but it's easier for the camel to fit through an eye of a needle than a rich man to get into heaven. If I had a dollar for every time my mother said this, I would have had financial freedom a long time ago. Probably even before I went to college. But, dear mother, let me tell you what this passage really means. And I learned it as I entered Science of Mind. And I was taught by some really wise spiritual seekers and teachers. Turns out the eye of a needle is an actual geologic structure on a very popular trading route in biblical times. And at that time, they used camels as kind of beast of burden, right? So as merchants arrived at the eye of the needle, their camels couldn't fit through there with all the bundles and packages on. So they would need to take the packages off the camels, lead the camels through, and then put the bundles back on. When I learned this, I was like, amen, it's not that hard, Mom. It takes a little work. But it's totally doable. What it means is the rich man, much like the miser, cannot experience heaven. The rich man cannot experience financial freedom. The rich person cannot experience happiness, no matter how rich they are, until they shed themselves of their burdens about money and financial freedom, and probably about forgiveness and love and friendship. A lot of the other things that Ari's saying about for us. If we can release our burdens, then we can experience, and by the way, heaven is now, right? So that's what that passage means. So now, being aware or having shed ourselves of these false beliefs now, how do we actually go from there to financial freedom? Well, as I already said, the path to financial freedom does not go through money, or money is not the way to financial freedom. It's part of it. It's part of the experience of financial freedom, but it is not the way to financial freedom, meaning don't focus on the money. So what is the way? Well, if you were here last week and you've been hanging out here for more than like 5 minutes, you probably know the answer is our consciousness. It's about our consciousness around money and financial freedom. Our thoughts, attitudes, and beliefs about it all. And I propose to you today that there are three components to achieving a consciousness of financial freedom. First, the spirit within is our source. Money is not our source. Our careers are not our source. Other people are not our source. The government is not our source. The spirit within is our source, which is why this 40-day plan for prosperity, and in case you weren't here last week, by prosperity, we mean all the good things of life. But the spirit as our source is why the 10 affirmations we're working with in here are almost all about knowing that the God within us makes all things possible. Second component to building a consciousness of financial freedom, be open. Be open to the incredible things that that infinite wisdom can do in our lives. In other words, don't tell God how to do what God does. All right? We don't need to hand over a roadmap to God saying, I'm going to do this, 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 and this to achieve my financial freedom. Now, I'm not saying that as you work with this, you won't be inspired to save money, that you won't be inspired to invest in your retirement, that you won't be inspired to make wise decisions of how to use your money. You will likely be inspired to do all those things. And by all means, do them, because that is part of financial freedom. What I'm saying here is don't limit that infinite intelligence. There are so many ways to achieve financial freedom. I knew a woman in college who, with a very small income, lived a fantastic life because she was a master at bartering. I mean, she bartered for so many things. She bartered for a big share of her monthly rent. She bartered to get free books at the local bookstore, to get coffee and treats at the local coffee shop. She bartered for her therapy. She even bartered, and this is the one I loved the most, for a really sweet road bike that I was deeply envious of, okay? But she lived this incredible life, and she was free of debt. She lived this incredible life with a very little income. So just don't put too many limits on that intelligence at work. And the third component of building a consciousness of financial freedom, surrender yourself to being of use to that divine action in the world. What I mean is surrender yourself to being a beneficial presence. Let the Spirit use your talents, your knowledge, your interest to be a beneficial presence. And why this is important in building financial freedom is there's no private good. And your financial freedom will never come from somebody else's harm. In fact, what is good for you will be good for everyone involved in the situation, because that's just how God operates. I used all three of these components some years ago when I finally determined to experience more financial freedom in my life. I was already an attorney. I was already working in large part with immigrant children with the family law or the family court part of the process they go through to gain legal status in this country. But I decided, you know, I'm doing pretty good, but I could probably be doing better. And I'd taken a class on financial freedom at Mile High Church back in Denver. I was like, I'm going to give this a try. And that's where I learned the term financial freedom. And so I was working with a practitioner on and off for years at that point. So I went to this practitioner. I said, I want you to help me with this, which, by the way, is what led me to this 40-day plan we're doing, because that practitioner said, well, first of all, do this. And not only did I do this, but every morning, almost every morning, throughout these 40 days and for several months after that, my morning spiritual practice was these three things that I just told you about. I would just be in prayer, knowing and claiming for myself financial freedom. Wasn't focused on a certain amount of money. I stopped putting the sticky notes on the bathroom mirror with a certain dollar figure on them, because that wasn't working. I just focused on financial freedom, what that would mean for my life, what my life would feel like and look like, and just sit with that feeling, that sense of freedom. And then I would just say things like, I don't know when, where, or how this happens, but I trust that the divine makes it happen, that this happens into my life. I don't need to know where it comes from. I trust that it happens. And then I just turned myself over to Spirit. I said, I'm your hands, I'm your feet, I am your heart, I am your mind. Let me be your eyes, ears, heart. Let me work for you. Now one day the phone rings. It's an immigration attorney in Fort Collins who I'd never heard of. She got my name from another attorney, and she said, so I hear you work with immigrant children. And I said, yes, I do. We had a conversation. She said, well, I have a young client who needs help with that family court process. Can you do that? I said, sure, I can do that. So I took on this client and did what I do, got the orders I needed from the domestic court, sent those orders to the immigration attorney who did her magic with the actual immigration service. She calls me a couple months later and says, great news, the kid now has legal immigration status. Fantastic, thanks for letting me know. She's like, no, I'm not done. She goes, that was really a test case. I have a proposition for you. She said, I have a lot of these children who need help. I want to send all of them to you. Because of all the family law attorneys I worked with, you did the best job on those highly specialized orders that these kids need. And I started a nonprofit that pays for legal representation for these children. And I'm sending them all to you. That nonprofit paid 50% of the legal fees for every one of those children for years. And I put their families and guardians on payment plans for the other 50%. And by the way, immigrants pay their bills. Let me just tell you, every single one of those immigrant families paid. Okay? This ended up being a huge component of my financial freedom. And even better than that, it was so deeply satisfying to know that I got to be a part of hundreds of immigrant children getting legal status. I think about them every day in our current climate. But there's no private good, which is why Wayne Dyer said, when I chased after money, I never had enough. When I got my life on purpose and focused on giving of myself and everything that arrived into my life, then I was prosperous. And notice he uses the word prosperous, not rich. Wayne Dyer is smart enough to know that his real prosperity is a lot more than money. He was prosperous in his financial freedom, but he was also prosperous in being a beneficial presence. He was prosperous in how life felt by being that beneficial presence. The path to financial freedom does not go through money. It goes through our consciousness. It goes through the consciousness of knowing that the spirit within is our source, and it will use us to make all things possible. And as I said last week, as a shout out to Michael Beckwith, and that's the truth. That's it. All right.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you happen to be in the Portland, Oregon area, we'd love to have you visit in person. The Portland Center for Spiritual Living is located at 6211 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Our inspirational service is at 11 a.m. every Sunday. We also have many programs, classes, and workshops developed just for our online audience. To find out more, go to our website at cslportland.org and look under the online tab. We have a variety of content dedicated specifically for our podcast listeners. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its podcast, you can donate online at cslportland.org/donate. Our website is also the place to learn more about what's going on at the center or to contact us. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are in your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living.